The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Coach Bowles told me from the very beginning, just be myself, be passionate, be the fiery leader. He knew me from the college days.
He set the tone for this team with his, for lack of a better word, he's probably a 1 out of 10. He's a 10 on the prick scale. So, sorry, Nelson.
Thank you. I'll take that.
Sorry, Nelson, indeed. That's not a town, municipality, village in the UK or Scotland or Ireland or anywhere. Nelson is Nelson Luis, the longtime PR director for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And it was funny when they put together the transcript that was sent out to reporters. The word for which Jason Light apologized was changed to prickly. Prickly.
Oh, we can't
Nelson,
handle that word.
That's not, that's a far different word.
Handle the word.
It's got the same 5 letters to start.
Jeez, right.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Well,
I knew when I saw it I saw that word in brackets in the transcript. I went straight to YouTube to find the raw video because I knew, because it also said, sorry, Nelson, in the transcript.
Right,
I knew that he said prick.
Yeah, right.
And it's just a great quote. Now, it's hard to match Bo Scarborough's you can love football, but it can't love you back because it's a ball as top quote of the week. But this is a clear number two from Jason Light.
Oh, yeah, this might be number one to me. I mean, it might be. First off, here's the first thing. What's the deal with the hats with the backward city names, right, that Baker had on? Have you noticed that lately?
Like upside down?
Upside down, right? Down. I've seen other cities, other people wearing hats, right? I've seen one with Dallas. I believe I might have even saw one that was Chicago, if I remember correctly. I don't know what that new style is, but I'm seeing it out there with like famous people, and I'm wondering if it's some new hot trend, right? The Tampa Bay backwards, right?
Let me just say this. Yeah. The fact that you're simply asking that question means you're old.
Yes.
Anytime you reach a stage of life where you're like, I demand to know what twerking is, the great Peter King.
Right.
You are old
and
life has passed you by. And they actually asked him about it later in the press conference.
Okay, good.
He said he was supporting a friend or something like that. So maybe this is the 2024 version of the big giant hat that Brian Robinson was wearing after a game in 2022. So this is going to be a thing now. You take the city name, you turn it upside down. And it infringes on no NFL trademarks because it's the name of the city, not the name of the team. So that's a way to get around having to give the league their cut. If it said Buccaneers upside down, you get a cease and desist letter. If it says Tampa upside down, there ain't nothing they can do about it. So that was addressed near the end of the press conference.
Cool.
And I get the impression there's somebody who's a friend of Baker's that he's trying to help out with the upside down Tampa
on his hat.
Yeah, there must be a connection to the NFL, too, because I saw a few people at the Combine even wearing those hats, right? I know we had a coach, I believe, that had a hat on that said Dallas backwards. So, yeah, somebody's got connections there trying to make their way. So, see, there you go.
He got the quote.
Stan corrected, though. See, it's not that cool yet. I am still cool. I'm not out of the loop. Say, sorry, Chris. You are still pretty cool. But you didn't know what it was.
Sorry, Nelson. You're only a 9.5 on the prick scale, Chris. Baker has you beat. Baker Mayfield
said about the hat. Yeah,
he got it. I'm a 12, baby. He got it from an organization that Jason Light invests in, so you should ask Jason. And then they did, and Light said, I really don't know anything about the company, but we like local businesses. So who knows? Who knows where it comes from? Bottom line is, and as Mayfield said, he's a hat guy, especially in the morning when he rolls out of bed.
Right.
So he puts on a hat and he comes to his press conference.
When's the last time you wore a hat?
$100 million contract.
When's the last time you wore a hat?
I wear one every third Saturday when I go get my haircut, because I wake up on Saturday morning and I had that same epiphany and realization this morning. Like, after sleeping, like, if I take a nap for 1 to 1.5 hours, my hair isn't like Einstein. Anything more than 2 hours in bed, when I wake up, I mean, it's like, what are those little trolls? Like, the hair's just everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
And there's nothing you can do.
Right.
The hard reset, you got to take a shower and start over again.
Right.
So when I go to get my hair cut on Saturday, I'll put a hat on. And depending upon how my hair looks after the haircut, I'll wear the hat home. And that's the extent of my hat wearing. Or like if I'm walking down to the barn and it's raining and I'm not wearing a hoodie, I'll just grab a hat and walk down there.
You so get a haircut,
out in public,
you say bye to the guy, and then
public.
Put a hat on and go, hey, good job. Hold on, I'm embarrassed about this haircut. Let me put a hat on to go home.
Well, I think it's fairly common for people to you know, prefer to configure their own hair.
Yeah, I hear you there.
To not be 100% on board with how it looks when you leave the
I mean, I know. So. It's just funny because I know you're just getting in the car and going home. It's not like you're going down like Broadway in New York City with the paparazzi around you and they're like, hey, look at the new haircut by Florio. So, like, what kind of hat?
I hit the town on the way home. I hit the town. I stop at the grocery store.
Okay, so you do make some moves. All right, you hit the town. Okay. I like that. So what kind of hat? Because I've never seen you with a hat on, and I would like to see that. So I'd like you to take a picture of yourself next time.
Okay, I will. And I'll tell you, it's always, just like my wardrobe choices, the closest and the cleanest.
Oh, okay.
And last year, during the 2022 season, when they did the Cancer Awareness Month, they sent NBC a bunch of the hats with the pattern on it. It's kind of a neat tie-dye almost pattern. And there was one with the Vikings logo in the middle. And our boss on Football Night in America and here on PFT Live, even though he never produces the show anymore, Matt Casey, gave me one of the hats. So it's sitting there on my shelf. So that's the hat I wear when I go to get my hair cut and when I go to the grocery store on the way home. So thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt. You look good. That is not the hat I wear. Can I get one of those? So, and here's the best thing about it. Not that I have a problem with people talking to me in public.
Yeah.
As you probably know, I'm somebody who welcomes anyone coming up to me and talking to me under any set of circumstances. And really, I am kidding. I don't mind it at all. It doesn't happen all that often. It happens far less often when I have that hat on. People don't know who I am when I have that hat on.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
It's not no one's used to seeing you like that. So you got to wear a hat on a consistent basis for people to still recognize you in the hat, right? I think that's the key. You know, I have some friends who wear hats, right? Shanahan, he's a hat wearer all the time. He puts a hat on like he thinks he's going to hide from people. And I'm like, dude, you're on national TV and there's 100 million people watching. You're wearing a hat. You're not hiding from anybody, right? Like, they know what you look like with a hat on. You're not getting away there. So I always find that interesting. I'm not a big hat guy.
I think it's kind of like a security blanket. I do.
Yeah, I hear you.
For some people.
It is.
There's a certain comfort,
right,
that even if it makes you not anonymous, not blend in, not disappear into the hedges like Homer Simpson, it still makes you feel that you have some degree, I don't know, I don't want to psychoanalyze Kyle Shanahan or anyone else, but I feel like it gives you some certain degree of comfort that you're not as out there as you otherwise would be.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, or whatever. It puts you in the zone, right? I mean, John Gruden, of course, all those years with the visor, that was part of his mantra. And yeah, I do think there's something to what you're saying, whether it's focus or the look or, yeah, thinking you're, you know, blocking some outside peripheral noise, vision, whatever. Yeah, I guess that's the reason. But, yeah, I'm not much of a hat
peripheral,
guy.
I'll give you peripheral.
Peripheral.
I'll give you peripheral.
Peripheral,
today.
Sorry. Yeah, mood. Thanks.
Peripheral. Peripheral. Oh, boy, he corrects the Simsism with a different Simsism.
One, a
peripheral?
Different one.
It's peripheral.
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 Texas. Peripheral.
Texas.
Vision. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway. It was very celebratory yesterday because Baker Mayfield is staying in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And look, everybody missed on this guy last year. He did a one-year bargain basement $4 million deal. He hit some of the upside. And now this year he was available to anyone. And I had the conversation last week trying to figure out where Baker was in play for because he hadn't signed his contract. And at one point, Jason Light, when they introduced Mike Evans' new deal last week, he said, hey, he's going to see what's out there. And by Sunday, he had accepted what the Buccaneers were offering because there was nothing better out there, nothing dramatically better. I think Baker Mayfield would have taken a little bit less than he could have gotten elsewhere to stay with the Buccaneers. But
great.
You know how the Bucs are. They don't pay signing bonuses.
Yep, right.
They don't. They don't pay signing bonuses. So you offer that same deal with a very significant signing bonus, and it becomes more attractive. You offer a little bit more with a significant signing bonus, it becomes more attractive. He wanted to stay in Tampa. He wants to have a place where he sets down roots. He loves it there. He said yesterday he and his wife, Emily, would live there in the offseason if they had gone to a different team. This works out perfectly for the Buccaneers because for the second straight year, the other teams out there didn't want him. They want somebody younger. He's only 28. They want somebody younger.
Yeah. No, I mean, and listen, I understand that too, right? You know, and there's the – hey, yeah, Baker Mayfield, he's not to maybe other cities going to be, whoa, look, we got Baker Mayfield. Look at this new shiny toy, right? I think he's in the perfect spot. Yeah, tie goes to Tampa. I think you said it right. Even if another team maybe offered him a little bit more money, that goes to Tampa too. It's not easy to, you know, plant roots like we talk about, become the guy. You have a rapport with Evans and some of the other guys, you know, on the field, off the field, all that. And then to just go somewhere else and put your plant your flag in the ground and go, oh, hey, I'm going to take over and be the man again. That's rare. I mean, it's not easy to do. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of getting to know people. And I think that's why Tampa was probably comfortable with this. And we talked about this before with this whole situation, knowing that they had those things in their advantage, and on their side. Let alone, you know, you said it right. Baker, I think, really wants to be there. I had the chance to visit with Baker 2-3 times, towards the end of the year and talk to him a little bit. And I know, I mean, he was point blank with it about liking Tampa, liking what they got going on there, right? And his wife was happy, everything about that. So I just wasn't shocked to see this deal get done. And we talked to Jason Light, whether it was in Detroit or at the Combine, and you could tell the love and respect for Baker Mayfield was there as well, right? So there was a liking by both sides here. And, you know, Baker helped them close the Tom Brady era, and they didn't fall apart. And I think there's some love for him because of that, and then vice versa because nobody else wanted him, and the Bucs gave him a chance.
You mentioned that he planted his flag in Tampa. He's the guy who literally
planted
a flag around Ohio State when Oklahoma won there. And he's always had this natural charisma that does sometimes cross the line into antisocial behavior, whether he's grabbing a body part on the sideline in college, whether he's giving reporters a hard time in Cleveland. And as he's matured, he has harnessed that. He has directed it. He still has it. He still has that thing that makes him a natural leader. It makes him a guy that the other players want to respond to and follow. And that is rare, that you have the physical talent, the arm skill to play quarterback in the NFL, plus you bring to the table a personality that makes you a natural, charismatic, magnetic leader. That's what he has, and Tampa Bay puts a value on that. Other teams apparently didn't.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay did, and that makes it even more of a bargain for the Buccaneers. to pay $33 million a year on a three-year deal for a guy who comes in and plays the position at a high level and is one of the best current natural leaders at the quarterback position in football. Kind of a throwback mentality,
yep.
Drop your head and gain the tough yards in the right circumstances. We don't advocate that on a regular basis for quarterbacks. That separates him from other quarterbacks who just aren't that way. And it's not something you can coach. It's not something you can teach. It's not something you can learn. It's who you are, period. And he fully leans into who he is. That's what makes it even better. So on the issue of money, let's hear a little yesterday from Baker Mayfield. He was asked this question, Kirk Cousins in Atlanta, bigger contract. Baker, did you leave money on the table to come back to Tampa Bay?
Maybe not.
Any day now. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah, I said it immediately after our Detroit game. Following the loss, there's to build a winning team and to have a lot of the key pieces that we needed back to continue this run and improve it. Some sacrifice have to be made. Now, listen, this is life-changing money, and I'm not going to act like otherwise. It's something that I've worked extremely hard for over the years and many years of football, so I'm grateful for it. I'm a winner at heart. I hate losing, so knowing that we get a lot of guys back and we can continue to build this for years to come, it's a special thing.
No state taxes.
That's a good point.
Use that one a lot.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, but that's all the more reason to ask for a signing bonus, because you don't pay the state tax on the signing bonus. When you get your money in salary, when you play on the road in a state that has income taxes, you got to pay. They go to San Francisco, he's paying 13.3%.
That's right.
Of that game check.
Right.
So, that, you know, on one hand, the Buccaneers can say, hey, we don't have to pay these signing bonuses because we don't have state income taxes. On the other hand, I'd rather have a signing bonus or a roster bonus or something that is paid to me here so I don't have to pay state income tax on the road elsewhere. Anyway, look, this gets back to that balance that we try to strike, that argument that we get into from time to time. Get as much as you can while you can versus leave some behind so you have enough help around you. And it drives me crazy because this entire system has warped the mentality of players and created a dilemma for them that they shouldn't have, because the teams can afford to pay everyone what they're worth. But you create this artificial bean counting system that forces a player to say, oh, am I being selfish?
Yeah.
Oh, am I? But it's not a matter of being selfish versus the oligarch who has a 300-foot yacht. It's selfish versus the guy next to you that you're trying to lead out onto the field, into the fray, into the effort to try to win enough games to go to the playoffs. It really is, if you think about it, it's genius. It's diabolical. That was the word I was searching for. It's diabolical that they've come up with this way to create a dilemma for the players so they don't ask for more, So they don't carry the bowl of gruel up and say, please, sir, may I have some more? Because every additional spoon you're taking is coming away from one of your teammates.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Like, first off, like I didn't expect him to get as much money as Kirk Cousins. I mean, Kirk Cousins has been a bona fide, you know, top 10, top 12 starter for a number of years here, right? You know, that, so I didn't expect that. I mean, Kirk Cousins, you know, especially the last 2 years, played at a really high level, right? I mean, we've talked about it. It was up and down the field with Minnesota. They went 13-4 with the worst defense in football, like not even close 2 years ago. So Kirk Cousins has planted his flag in the ground a little bit more of as a established, viewed as a guy that, hey, you can build an offense around and win a lot of games with around the NFL. Baker Mayfield is still in the category, even though he's not there with us totally, right? And I'm sure he changed a lot of minds this year. I think he's still like, I don't know, how good is he? Is this 1 year? Whatever. So I didn't expect him to get the same money. I think the other part of that conversation too, that goes back to, you know, Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. That's where Brady, did great things for his own team, right? He didn't raise his hands. That's where, and go, I want more, less money. They lowballed off for him, and then they figured it out from there. And just like most of the Patriot players, they didn't go test the market or ever go, hey, screw you. They let Bill back them into the corner, and that's one of my reasons I think they're bitter towards him now, because they look and go, I should have made a lot more money, right? And I want to go, well, you should have tested the market, but you let the Patriots corner you, and you weren't, a lot of them, I'm not sure if they thought how good they were if they left the Patriots, right? But that's what started it. Then Rodgers accepting his contract and being team friendly probably for a few too many years. Then Mahomes with that contract. So it's become a thing for quarterbacks. It's a talking point. Any radio station I go on, talk about, well, maybe he should take less, right, to make the team better, do all that. And, yes, it's like you always talk about, It's quarterbacks who want to win. They want the guys they want in the locker room, and that gets used against them by the owners and by the teams and by the media and the public pressure and these conversations to then not maybe hold the team down to every penny they could get. And that's unfortunate, but again, like he said, it is life changing money. He's in a good spot here. But yeah, I think that's what started it, Mike, at least in my view. I don't know. You got a different view of that?
Well, and I also look at the reality that he has seen his football life flash before.
That's true
his
too.
Eyes.
Right.
When you consider the past couple of years. After the 2020 season, remember there was, and I think it was Joe Thomas that was putting out there that the Browns had offered him $30 million a year, and people were like, oh, he didn't take $30 million a year. It's like, well, no, he's potentially worth $40 million a year. So, no. But when he gets injured in week two because he's making a tackle after a turnover and it derails his career in Cleveland, and then he gives up money, money that he was fully guaranteed to earn to go to Carolina to try to restart things, and Carolina ends up being a shit show that year. Sorry, Nelson. And then he goes to the Rams and has that great Thursday night game. And we think, oh, that's going to be the key to him getting some kind of real contract in free agency. And he gets a 1 year, $4 million deal. Again, that's not horrible money, but as NFL quarterbacks go, it's peanuts.
Yeah.
To take that and parlay it into a $100 million contract that he never thought he was going to get. Think about the dark hours.
Yeah, that's right.
The moments when you're trying to fall asleep.
I hear you.
When you're assessing where your life is in comparison to where you thought your life was going to be. This is a guy that always oozed confidence. He knew he was going to be the top pick in the draft.
Yeah.
When people were like, yeah, top pick in the draft? Get out of here. Top pick in the draft. He always believed and it always manifested itself. And finally, the things he believed in, the things he was willing himself to weren't happening. You start to think you're losing your skills. You start to question anything you ever believed in. So to have this ship come in with him, with nine figures written along the side of it, that validates everything he's always believed. So he's not going to say no to that.
That's right.
He's not going to say, I'll go somewhere else for a little bit more. This is the place where I was able to make everything I've always believed come to fruition. There's no way I'm leaving.
I think that's exactly right. That is. And hey, listen, as an ex-player or whatever, I've been there. I told you the story before I hurt my spleen. They offered me $10 million guaranteed. I said, no, I'm going to be worth more than that next year when I'm a free agent, right? I got hurt, blah, blah, blah. Days were dark, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I should have more money, my career. I should have. And then, you know, I got healthy and got a decent little contract with the Denver Broncos in 2008. And I was grateful just to get a few million, right? I was, oh my gosh, right? Because, yeah, my expectations, my world had been turned upside down to where, yeah, I was going, man, I'm on, you know, I'm here going to get a $20 million signing bonus here, you know. And then it went to, damn, I don't know if I'm going to even be able to play again. Oh, wait, okay, I can play. I don't know if I'll ever be able to start and be good again. And then I got to that point where I was like, wait, I feel pretty good. I'm close to the normal Chris Sims again. And I got a little money as a backup quarterback. And, yeah, I was so grateful and happy. So, yeah, I think you're right, Mike. I think expectations change, let alone I think you and me know, right? I mean, we meet quarterbacks all the time. He's got the personality and the persona that you talk about that oozes starting quarterback, the way he acts, right? And then he has starting quarterback talent. His arm is elite. Baker Mayfield's arm is one of the stronger arms in football. It can make throws that, you know, a lot of guys in the game can't. I mean, in fact, Ahmed and Fareed and I were talking about it on my podcast the other day because during the halftime of the Lions-Bucks game, right, we're on the field getting ready to do the halftime report there, and Baker made a few throws on that last drive when they went on that, like, 92-yard touchdown drive before the half where you went, whoa, like, those were, you know, missiles he threw through the air there. So you add that arm, and then you add to what Jason Light talked about, the, you know, the prick element, right? That's usually a good thing as far as a quarterback. I'm sorry, I'm just using his words. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but hey, head coaches, offensive coordinators, they like when their coach or their quarterback is a little bit of a prick. Their team is different that way. That's the way it is, right? I mean, you know, John Gruden used to give me these lessons too. He'd be like, he'd always tell me things where we'd be watching film and we'd watching it and yeah, he'd be making his faces and somebody made a mistake or whatever. And he'd be like, Sims, what would Joe Montana say right now? Because he would say this to me as a rookie. So I always had to say, it'd be year four. And he'd be like, and I'd have to sell, hey, what the F are you doing, blah, blah, blah. Because he'd always told me as a rookie, Joe Montana, if you messed up, you were going to hear about it. And he was going to get on you. So, yeah, coaches like that because they don't always want to be the bad guy. Like we talk about with Brady in New England or anywhere else, you know, his ability to be a little bit of a jerk on the sideline, yell at guys on the field, on the practice field, and then have a nice human touch off the field. But that's like an extension of the coaching staff. And I think that's where Baker Mayfield has changed, like you were talking about from Cleveland, where it might have been a little too prick and prickly and maybe a little too, you know, bravado and I'm the man. And now he's found just the right touch of like, I'm the man, I'm the leader, right? But we're about our business and we got to get things right. And I think he's found the right touch there. And that's why they like him so much in Tampa Bay.
What Joe Montana would have said to John Gruden is, if you don't shut your damn mouth and quit yapping at me like a chihuahua, I'm going to stuff you in a footlocker and throw you in the Hillsborough River. That's what Joe Montana would have said to John Gruden.
Maybe.
So, yeah, so from one quarterback who got paid a lot of money to another quarterback who got paid.
Oh!
And Kirk Cousins did not wear a hat with Atlanta written upside down to his introductory.
No, because he's more
Kirk
like
Cousins,
me. He's nerd dad. He doesn't know. He's like, what's that hat?
Kirk
I don't
Cousins
get it.
Did not wear a T-shirt. As I observed yesterday, Kirk Cousins looked like the high school principal who was getting ready to read the list of the names of graduates at the commencement ceremony. Kirk Cousins already is morphing into Matt Ryan on his first day on the job.
Seriously.
In Atlanta. Here's Kirk Cousins from yesterday, late afternoon, early evening. I think it was around 7 o'clock Eastern when he did the introductory press conference on his decision to choose to sign with the Atlanta Falcons.
When the owner, general manager, head coach, and quarterback are on the same page, that's when you really have a chance to go win a Super Bowl. And as I looked at the Atlanta Falcons, I believe strongly that the owner, head coach, general manager, and quarterback can all be on the same page. You know, I think in Minnesota, it was trending over the last couple off seasons to be in somewhat year to year. And as we talked with Atlanta, it felt like this was a place where, you know, if I play at the level I expect to play, that I can retire a Falcon. And that was something that really excited me. And that's certainly the goal.
Well, now, in a very tactful way, Kirk Cousins might have been alluding to a point that we've made the past couple of days when he says the coach, the owner, the GM, all on the same page. That was the issue in Minnesota, and
no
Kirk
doubt.
Was living it.
No
He's got
doubt.
A coach that wants him. He's got an organization that is ambivalent about him, that is taking it year to year, that doesn't want to make a long-term commitment. And I think in mentioning year to year, he was in a very subtle way
100%.
Providing a clue as to what the Vikings offered.
Definitely.
It was a one-year deal with some stuff on the back end that gave the Vikings the ability to say, okay, you were good enough last year. We'll keep you another year, but we have the right to walk away. And I'm still trying to get the offer the Vikings made. And I've asked multiple people who would have access to it, and I can't get it yet.
Yeah,
because
it ain't good.
But Chris, I think your instincts are right.
Right? Yeah.
It was enough to be respectful, but not nearly enough to be acceptable.
Right.
That's my gut feeling, and I think that's yours as well.
Yeah, that is, and yeah, I feel like as time goes on, we're gonna hear that or figure that out, you know. But yeah, I think it's again, like I said on Monday or Tuesday, whatever the hell day it was. That you know, we get to the end of the week or early next week, and we haven't heard numbers there as far as Kirk Cousins and what he was offered by Minnesota. That tells you that it wasn't even in the same league as what the Atlanta Falcons were doing or offering here, right? And I think you're spot on too. That to me was the first thing I caught, right? I mean, that was the first thing I was like, oh, you know, he's saying that, yeah, because he likes that in Atlanta, but he's saying that because he didn't have that in Minnesota. Right? I mean, obviously, coach, GM, not on the same page, and you've explained it. The Wilf family, right? They and I respect that they let their football people do what they do, but they're off in New Jersey. They're not there on a daily basis. It's a little different dynamic. Arthur Blank, he's around a lot there in Atlanta. You know, they're all there. And then, of course, he's got an extension of himself there and Rich McKay and other people that are always there, too, to report and all that. So I can understand as a quarterback like Kirk Cousins at this point of his career, you know, wanting those type of things. His history with Raheem Morris, knowing what he's getting there, right? Knowing, okay, I don't know Terry Fontenot, but I've heard good things. And he alludes to calling people and talking about him, right? Drew Brees at one point. And then the owner obviously being involved and saying things that he liked. Yeah, that it matched up for Kirk Cousins, and I can't blame him for making the move for those reasons and, of course, the money as well.
The money, $45 million a year on a four-year deal, $100 million guaranteed as a practical matter. The only way they get out of that final $10 million, it's $90 million fully guaranteed over the first 2 years, $10 million that's injury guaranteed for the third year, but they can only get out of it by cutting him after 1 year because that extra $10 million becomes fully guaranteed next year. So they're not going to do 1 year $90 million. It's going to be 2 years $100 million. The question is in year three, do they pay the other $35 million he's due to make? That'd make it 3 years $135 million. So either way, it's a damn good deal for Kirk Cousins at age 35 coming off of that torn Achilles tendon. He was also asked about the status of the injury that required surgery, from which he's recovering. Here he is addressing that yesterday without his upside-down Atlanta hat on.
Optimistic that I can be full speed at practice before we break for the summer, and that's kind of the goal I've set for myself. But we do have a long runway, and what I've been told going back to when I first injured it was that you don't rush it. You let time, you know, do its thing, and it's going to take time to fully heal that tissue. I do think that, you know, I can take drops. I can play the quarterback position, if you will, throwing the football. I think the minute I would have to leave the pocket is where you would say, yeah, he's still recovering from an Achilles. But taking drops, making throws, that's really no problem at this point.
Not that this is a guy who breaks the pocket and runs for 30 yards on a regular basis anyway. So it sounds like he's close to 100% as it relates to his typical skill set, because already, I mean, that's been one of the criticisms over the years. When the walls start to cave in,
yeah,
he can't
sure.
improvise. He can't extend the play. He can't make the off-schedule throw. That's what separates great from good. And he's good. There's no doubting that he's good. And he's on his road to being healthy. He said he passed his physical on everything but the Achilles tendon. That was one of the questions we raised. They're making this huge commitment, and you're taking this leap of faith. How are you protected in the event that there's a setback? Is the injury guarantee, and this will be interesting, and one of my goals now is to get the language of the contract. Is there an exception for the injury guarantee as it relates to the Achilles.
Right.
Sometimes that's in there. Now, it might only apply to that final $10 million, but still, if this Achilles is an issue, maybe they are protected to some extent from owing him as much as we think they owe him. But there he is doing his thing. And look, that's a hard court tennis court. That's not a forgiving surface.
Right.
That's
no.
a lot like the stuff.
But
your
that's
dad
not full
on.
Speed drop. Like, let me pop up in the pocket. Right? He's like, he could say, oh, I could, you know, could stand there and make throws and do all that. He's not 100% there either. He drops more aggressively when you watch a real game. When he hits the back of his drop, he's way more aggressive with pushing up and doing that. So you can see that's just, what, 2-3 weeks ago? He's still being a little ginger on that, right? So there's time there. There is. But this was part of the risk we talked about a little bit with Atlanta. Like, hey, you're going to pay this guy all this money. He's going to be your leader. And, hey, he's not going to do anything in OTAs. So you're not going to get – you're not – like Drake London and Pitts aren't going to get any timing or rhythm with Kirk Cousins. And then we're going to go into training camp. And, you know, listen, I don't know, but I just – the way this goes, guys his age, I feel like it's going to be, hey, let's manage him. He does this many reps this day, this many. So you're paying a lot of money a guy here that we're going to, like, slowly bring along. That, to me, was the risk of this, you know, as far as for Atlanta. You know, for Kirk Cousins, you know, you kind of alluded to it a second ago. Hey, that the one good thing is him not being able to move the pocket, run, and all that. This is definitely one of the best offensive lines in football. You know, you heard me say that last year, right? I mean, I think this is where Kirk Cousins is going to be beautiful for them because he can open up the field in the passing game a little bit. And now, you know, teams will back off a little bit, worry about the passing game, and Bijan Robinson and that damn good offensive line will start to, you know, kick some butt, right? I mean, the Falcons are good. They're close. You know, they were 7-10 last year. If they didn't have the quarterback they had there, there was 4 or 5 games that you just slip around and go, oh, my gosh, that was close, and the quarterback really screwed it up at the end, and they should have won the game. You go, they should have been 10-7, maybe 11-6, one of those in a lot of ways if they have a good quarterback. And that's where they're hoping Kirk Cousins can flip that around with the rest of this new regime there.
There was also a lot of talk from Kirk Cousins on the urgency of getting ready for the season, working with his teammates beyond the boundaries of what the offseason program allows. Now, he did say he won't be fully up to speed until the end of the offseason program, but you think about that 6-week window in between, a lot of get-togethers in Atlanta or wherever with him and the receivers to get everyone on the same page. And maybe he's now motivated to go above and beyond what is required. Maybe he'll work on Tuesdays. And I'm not saying that to be...
Yeah, I know.
Even more of a prick than Baker Mayfield. When you go on record as part of this quarterback series and say you never do any football work at all on Tuesdays when you're on a Sunday to Sunday schedule, and I'm sorry, folks, you can give me a hard time about it if you want. You'll find something else if you don't do it on this. I really don't care. If you're all in with being the best quarterback you can be in the National Football League, during football season, you work every single day. You set the tone for your teammates. It's part of being that natural leader and holding people accountable. We don't shut it down.
And you're the highest paid person in the organization. So it's your duty to be that guy. Right. Go ahead. Sorry.
And so I wonder whether that will happen now. Will we hear at some point, I'm now working on Tuesdays? I've got a lot of catching up to do. I've got a lot to get myself ready to be as effective as I can be. Will there be an acknowledgement by Kirk Cousins that at this point in his career, at this point in his life, now that his family is living within an hour of his wife's parents, maybe a greater sense of overall harmony and happiness because of this? And when you listen to some of the things he said yesterday about his father-in-law and what a great Atlanta Falcons fan he is and a fan of all Atlanta sports, and that, it almost feels like this was destined to be. Like, this gives him a balance that maybe allows him to go all in on Tuesdays and frees him from whatever in the past might have been keeping him from being all in with football 7 days a week, which I think – you have to be. There has to be a certain element of unhealthy approach to this if you want to be great, because the other guys are doing it. That's my whole point. It's a competitive sport, inherently competitive, fiercely competitive, unhealthily competitive. And if you don't sign that same check that Patrick Mahomes is signing, that Tom Brady signed for all those years, and yes, there was a price to be paid at the end of the day, But you're never going to have your hand on a Lombardi trophy if you don't do that. Maybe now he will. Maybe this is the moment. With $45 million a year, with his family in a place where there may be a greater sense that he can go all in for a couple of years before he calls it quits to his career. If you're a Falcons fan, you can only hope that happens.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, listen, that's the way I see it. And again, hey, he's had a lot of success, certainly, you know, doing it his way. He certainly has a better career than me. But, yeah, I mean,
Define success.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean,
playoffs?
Well, yeah, not a ton. But, yeah, he's played really good football. Right. He's made a lot of money.
This could be the difference.
Yeah, this could be the difference. There's no doubt about it. To me, that's where I'm going with you, Mike. I mean, to me, that's the only way when you want to be the man. Like, if you want to be the guy and go to – it's the only way, right? That's part of it. Players' day off? So freaking what? Not quarterback day off. Right? I mean, that's just not the way it is. I don't care what it is. I mean, when I was the starting quarterback of the Bucs, it might have been, you know, late June. Nobody's in the facility, whatever. But I was going to stop by for a little while and do something and be there and work and do whatever. Right? I mean, that's what your duty is. I go to, you know, Kansas City before the season, right? They're going to open the year against the Detroit Lions. It's like 9 or 10 days before the game. It's a player's day off in Kansas City. Guess what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for Mahomes. He's in the meeting room. He's watching film. He's doing stuff. Nobody else is there, right? But Mahomes is there with the coaches. And he's already getting things in order and getting a feel for Detroit. Why the rest of the team is doing whatever at home, you know, having a poolside barbecue. But that's what the quarterback has to do. It has to be that guy. And not only for his own success, but for success of the team and to lead the way and all of that. And, you know, you're right. Maybe the it's not a hot iron poker on Kirk Cousins, but maybe the, oh, wait, this is great to be here. I'm so lucky. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I got family here. I want to just be as good as I can be for all those people. Maybe that'll get him to work on Tuesday. I mean, maybe you're right, Mike.
You know, as I mentioned, there is something about this when you hear him talk about playing in Atlanta that feels, in hindsight, like it was inevitable. I'm reminded, since we're still in the afterglow of the Oscars, of Slumdog Millionaire, which won the Best Picture Award in 2008, the question posed at the beginning and answered at the end as to how this kid, who supposedly doesn't know anything, ends up winning the prize on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. A, he is cheating. B, he is brilliant. C, he is lucky. Or D, it is written. It feels like it's been written. It feels like it's a perfect match for Cousins to be in Atlanta. And he was asked, why didn't you do this sooner in your career? Well, the opportunity never presented itself. Seems like something he was waiting to do. And I say all that as a precursor to our next topic. And this is becoming almost comical when you consider the extent to which the Falcons tampered with Kirk Cousins. And I say that knowing the tampering is rampant in the National Football League. It's the dirty little secret that isn't a secret. They started the legal tampering period because the tampering was so rampant they had to do something because it was just a joke. People were making a mockery of it. When everyone gets to Indianapolis, and we've talked about this a few times the past couple of weeks, for the scouting combine, you have agents meeting with teams, and it's rampant. Impending free agents know what's out there. They know what's behind door number two, door number three. Sometimes it helps a team. I believe it helped the Buccaneers get Mike Evans back because his agents were able to see what else wasn't out there for him. Now, it also helps that Mike Evans' wife said, we're not leaving Tampa. That could be a powerful factor as well. But I say all that because the Falcons, and I thought of you this morning. I was trying to think of a good example. Remember when we were in Indianapolis and you're walking around and you smell weed?
Yeah.
And we're like, wait a minute, weed's not legal here. Well, it's one thing to walk around and smell the weed and not know where it's coming from. If somebody's running down the street saying, I got the weed, I got the weed, you're going to get busted. And the Falcons are running around saying, well, I got the weed, I got the weed. On this, I mean, it is so blatant. It is so laughable. It is so obvious what they did in tampering with Kirk Cousins. And people I talk to around the league saying, oh, God, I mean, it's been going on for weeks, if not months. Everybody knows about it. The Falcons tampered with Kirk Cousins, and they're being reckless about it, Chris. And I think they're going to end up in a problem. When you think of the few occasions when the NFL has done something about it, it's been when it is so blatant that the NFL looks like a clown for not doing something about it.
I'll be interested to see where it goes. It is blatant. I would agree with you there. It's definitely a little more in your face than even the normal what we're talking about. You're exactly right. Now, you know, like you said, tampering's going on everywhere, right? I think it's pretty egregious for the most part. I don't think teams really care, right? There's kind of these unwritten rules of what you're maybe should tamper with and not, right? I don't think that a lot of coaches and GMs care about that, right? I don't think the league really cares unless it's something where it's like, wait, this is – you really – tried to screw over this organization, like Sean Payton and Tom Brady with the Miami Dolphins and under the radar trying to screw over the New Orleans Saints and all that type of stuff, right? That's where the league gets involved here. This is one where I feel like they look at it and go, well, and I think everybody, he's going to be a free agent, right? This wasn't like he was property of the team still. And it kind of gets, you know, just, hey, all right, this is the way it is. But yeah, this one is pretty blatant. It's to the point of, yeah, I don't think Minnesota's going to cry wolf here or anything like that, but some of the things he said in that presser yesterday, I mean, he couldn't have made it more obvious that he's been having these conversations for 3 or 4 weeks at least with the Atlanta Falcons and people there.
Here's where I'll disagree with you, because I believe the Vikings are waking up to the extent of the tampering. And
you
might
think it crossed the line, okay, right.
To make a stink.
Right.
I think it crossed the line into a territory where now you're making us look bad. What are we supposed to do about this? It's the equivalent of Spider telling Tommy to go F himself, and Tommy doesn't do anything about it. And De Niro's standing there saying, you're just going to let him get away with that?
Well,
what's the world coming to?
Yeah, right.
I feel like the Vikings are getting backed in that corner where they got to shoot Spider now.
Well,
where Spider is forcing the Vikings to shoot him. By being so blatant about it.
Maybe a little, but it's also, too, like, they better be careful, because then it's be like, well, what were you going to offer him? Are you going to offer him that? Well, that's a joke. Forget it, right? I don't know. And some ways, too, you look at it and go, this expedited an obvious process as well to where, what, did Minnesota still want him to be talking about it now, and then we'll wait another 2 weeks before the deal gets done? And then you don't, oh, crap, free agency, now we didn't even get a chance to get a quarterback we wanted or whatever. Wow. So I don't know. And I'm pro player, Mike. So I'm a little bit more of like the league colludes all the time. I know you're not. I'm not trying to go against you.
I know.
So I'm for that as far as the player getting a feel for how can I gauge in getting my most money there. And that's where I guess I don't get as mad about it.
Right. One of the things that drives me crazy about the NFL is they have all these rules and they enforce them selectively, not consistently.
Yeah, got you.
And this goes back to when I practiced law, especially when you handle cases involving employees whose rights have been violated by their employers, one of the best ways you can prove something that no one will ever admit, they'll never admit they fired someone because of their race, their gender, their religion, their age, whatever. The proof comes from the inconsistent way that the rules are applied. They got a stack of rules that they find one that this person they don't want around anymore violated, and then they enforce it. So it's always dangerous to have rules you don't consistently apply. And that's where the NFL is kind of finding a balance as it relates to tampering. Okay, just let's not be blatant about it, and let's not force us to do something about it, because otherwise we look like a joke. We look like we don't know what we're doing. That's where this has crossed the line, I believe. And here's the quick background.
Yeah.
As it relates to the bright line silver bullet tampering. 2015, when Jeremy Maclin, then with the Eagles, a former first-round pick of Andy Reid when he was in Philadelphia,
right,
when he was due to become a free agent, Andy Reid spoke to Jeremy Maclin directly during that 52-hour negotiating window, which is a clear bright-line violation, because all that can happen during the legal tampering period, the negotiating window, whatever term you want to apply, all that can happen is negotiations with the agent. Unless the player isn't represented, then it can be negotiations with the player. That's it. No other communications are allowed of any kind with the organization and the player. Now, it gets a little fuzzier when you're talking about player-to-player communications. We might talk about that later. But just as it relates to people who are part of the team, coaches, trainers, executives, etc., you're not allowed to talk to the guy until the clock strikes 4 o'clock Eastern on the first day of the league year. It is a bright line. It is clear. It is obvious. And if you're going to do it, you better not be dumb about it and tell the world you've done it, with that, we give you Kirk Cousins admitting to the world that apparently that's exactly what happened during the 52-hour window when they were only allowed to be negotiating directly with his agent. Here's Cousins from yesterday about his pre-start of the league year communications with Falcons representatives.
There's great people here, and it's not just the football team. I mean, I'm looking at the support staff, meeting, calling yesterday, calling the, our head athletic trainer, talking to our head of PR. I'm thinking, we got good people here. I kept getting off a call, whether it was with Jake Matthews, whether it was with the team chaplain, whether it was with, you know, Ryan Pace, whether it was with, you know, McGarry, whoever, Drake London. I said, Julie, these guys are sharp. I mean, I've been in locker rooms. I've seen what it can look like. I said, these guys are sharp, well-spoken. They want to win. They're humble. I mean, this could be fun.
Okay, I'm going to work backward on this. First of all, Ryan Pace, the former Bears general manager, is the director of player personnel in Atlanta, and I give credit to Pete Demolaitis for catching it. I missed it yesterday when I was watching the press conference. The light bulb didn't go off for me. And we don't know when he spoke to Ryan Pace, but driving in a car, and he was meeting with the media just 3 hours after the moment where he could have talked to Ryan Pace or anyone else. So that one's at least a So then you work back to him saying that yesterday, i.e. Tuesday, i.e. during the 52-hour window, he talked to the head athletic trainer. And if you noticed, Chris, he stopped himself. He said, meeting, calling, not meeting. Strike that from the record. Not meeting the head athletic trainer, calling the head athletic trainer. I mean, look, and this is on the Falcons for not telling him, Kirk, here's what you can and can't say. Like, they didn't even bother to explain to him that this stuff that they're doing blatantly violates the rules. So that's the first time in all the years I've done this and in the 10 years or so that they've had this legal negotiating window, this is the first time that a guy has stood up there at the podium and basically admitted to the world that they didn't just put a toe over the line. They did a cannonball into the shallow end of the pool.
No, I think by, it's cannonball. You know, I think Kirk Cousins reached out to Atlanta very early in the process, right? I do. Where, yeah, he realized, wait, there's a need at quarterback there. I'm going to get my agent to get my name in the mix there and get them thinking about it early on. And then it matched up with Raheem Morris being there and the rest of that, right? And I just think it took it a life of its own, and it probably got more aggressive and aggressive as it went on. I mean, again, even thinking about we alluded to Raheem Morris at the combine, talking about a player that fits, right, the Atlanta and wants to be in the city, right? We were going, like, I thought maybe it meant Justin Fields, right? We knew it was either Kirk Cousins or Justin Fields, but, you know, with those type of comments too, it makes you feel like, yeah, they knew what was coming, what was going to happen. But the thing to me, Mike, here is, like, you brought up Jeremy Maclin. That's really the last time I've heard the NFL enforce the rule or really worry about it. Like, I can't think of another time off the top of my head where stuff like the Jeremy Maclin things got, you know, enforced again on a team or a team was penalized for that kind of antics. You know, I feel like after that, they kind of pushed the bar up and were like, we're going to let that go. You got to be even, you know, more egregious and more under the radar, you know, trying to plan crazy stuff behind our back for us to care. And I feel like ever since then, they've kind of just gone, we don't really care as long as teams don't cry wolf too much here.
Right. And I think at the time what happened, and I remember it was explained to me that part of the motivation for hitting the Chiefs and making an example of an experienced and respected coach like Andy Reid, it was a message to the other coaches out there as to what is expected during this negotiating window. And the negotiating window was still new, and it was kind of clunky at first. I remember they had this dumb rule like you could negotiate, but you can't come to an agreement. Well, what if we accidentally come to an agreement? What if we realize while negotiating, oh shit, we've made an agreement. Sorry, Nelson. So, I you know, that they've evolved. But still, it's a bright line. You can't have direct communications with the player during that 52-hour window. And it might just be they haven't had a situation like this fall into their laps since then. And there's never been, to my recollection, a situation like this where the player stands up and says it. It reminds me of when the NFL had to hit the Jets for the Brett Favre partially torn biceps tendon a year later, because when he got to Minnesota and they started asking him about why the team fell apart down the stretch when they at one point were the number one seed after they beat your Tennessee Titans, I believe, on a Thursday night, they're the number one seed in 2008. What happened? Well, I had this arm injury. Well, what arm injury? They were never said you had an arm injury. And he kept talking about it, and he kept talking about it, and he kept talking about it. Somebody from the league explained to me. He eventually talked about it so much we couldn't ignore it. We had to do something about it. I feel like that's where we are with this blatant tampering, blatant conversations with multiple people from the organization, with Kirk Cousins, that they didn't have to do. That's what makes it so weird. They didn't have to do it. He was going there anyway. And it just shows that, Chris, this is the atmosphere that emerges when you never enforce the rule. You eventually get to the point where it is so rampant that you got to do something. And I feel like that's where we are here. What's the NFL going to do?
Well, let me just
either
say this.
Get rid of the rule or enforce it.
Is it more egregious than Brady in Tampa and Gronk in Tampa, who like literally had playbooks and were showing up the coaches' house to go practice when you weren't supposed to be doing that and getting playbooks?
But they never came out and said it.
Right. Well, they kind of did. I mean,
we knew it.
Right.
Remember what Gronk said? He was joking. He didn't say, yeah, they gave me the playbook early while I was still under contract with the Patriots. That's what Kirk said yesterday. That's the difference. And Byron Leftwich wandering around in somebody's house when he's looking for Tom Brady when they weren't supposed to be working out together. Again, in other cases, the players involved, the coaches involved, don't hand the smoking gun to the league. What Kirk did yesterday was he said, hey, look at this gun. It's smoking. Hey, everybody, look at this. Look, that's the difference. And I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. And it's always wrong if it violates the rules. The difference here is the stunning degree of recklessness with which the Falcons are saying, hey, look, we got a smoking gun. It's right here. That's what's different about it.
Yeah, I it was very obvious watching that presser yesterday. So there's no doubt about that. But I don't know if the NFL really cares in these instances, and I think it's going to take Minnesota to complain to the league a little bit to get them to start going, wait, or give them a slap on the wrist or penalty or whatever else. But it's going to take that, I think, for anything to happen ultimately, because I think it's gotten extremely loose with this type of stuff. And I don't think the NFL, has really cared for quite some time with some of this illegal tampering and how far it goes.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree. And the fact that everybody's gotten loose and everybody's gotten careless and everybody has gotten reckless, whenever the NFL decides to wake up the investigative machinery and look into it, it should be easy to find, because the evidence is going to be there. The digital footprints will be there. The call log. I'm reminded now of the whole Tom Brady destroying his phone, the call logs, texts. And back to the point where he said meeting before calling the head athletic trainer, meeting and then changing it to calling, two very different human interactions. I was talking to a GM from another team about this last night and went over this whole thing. Well, he starts to say meeting and then he says calling. Did you catch that? This person said if he met with the head athletic trainer during the 52-hour negotiating window, they should lose a first-round pick for that. That's how blatant it is. That's how over the line it is. If he actually was in the team facility or elsewhere meeting with team officials during that 52-hour window, that is something that the league does need to care about. So we'll see. We'll find out. And that's not the only one that happened yesterday, Chris. Earlier in the day, it was brought to my attention that an item at SI.com focused on the Penn State Nittany Lions from a micro site within SI.com. I think it's All Nittany Lions or something along those lines. Had quotes from James Franklin, the head coach at Penn State, about the recruitment of Saquon Barkley by the Philadelphia Eagles. And the whole point was that when the Eagles recruited Saquon Barkley, they tapped into his Penn State history and tied it together to try to get the deal done. And the way that Franklin explained it, I didn't realize we had it. Here it is. Don't listen to me as if you ever do. Listen to James Franklin potentially putting Howie Roseman, the Eagles GM, in a jackpot earlier this week. Have a listen.
For him now to come back and be able to play within the state, in Philadelphia, he said that was one of the first things that Howie said to him on the phone as part of kind of his sales pitch to him, was not only the Philadelphia Eagles and that, but obviously the connection with Penn State and the fan bases as well.
So, thanks, James. Thanks a lot, James. Thanks for getting us in trouble with the league, James. The Eagles have denied any improper contact, and they insist that all recruitment during the negotiating window happens only between the team and the agent representing the player. But that sure as hell ain't what James Franklin said, Chris.
No, it's definitely not. Now, it's different. It's secondhand, right? So where it could be, this is where it's not necessarily the same as Kirk Cousins, who's, the guy, and speaking about his experiences, basically illegal tampering, right? This is a little of like secondhand communication. So, I guess that like takes a little bit of the harshness away, and also we know how those conversations could go sometimes where it could have been like, and maybe it was Saquon's agent that talked to Howie and that was part of the sales pitch. And he just told John, Coach Franklin, like, hey, yeah, Howie, part of his sales pitch is, the Penn State thing and all that. And maybe he didn't. So I don't know. But like, as far as, compared to what happened with Atlanta and Kirk Cousins or other ones we've seen, I mean, come on, this is the least egregious thing in the world. I almost like, with star players that, move the needle, difference-making type players that become free agents, right? And let's just say there's 100 of them, right? I would almost bet 90 out of 100 get a call from somebody on the team to kind of just introductory, let's talk to you and meet you, or talk to you and get a feel for you, illegally, right? I would almost always with those type of guys. The lower level guys, no, they're not going to get that. It's not as much of a financial investment and fanfare and all of that. But, yeah, I think that's commonplace in a lot of ways for the GM or an owner to reach out to, might be player on our team that we're going to throw a lot of money to here very soon. Let me just say hi and make sure the guy's a normal human being and he's not some jerk or something like that. I do think that's a very normal part of the process in the NFL.
I know it's normal, but it's abnormal as it relates to the rules. I got two things to say, and then we have to take a break because we almost put a full hour into this segment. One, from the NFL's perspective, look at what they did. They create this fiction, this legal tampering period, at a time when tampering is rampant, everyone looks bad, it all looks goofy. You have the clock strike 12. It used to be midnight on a Friday when the league year began, and by 12:30, you'd have these multi-million-dollar deals already negotiated when they weren't allowed to have any communication of any kind whatsoever to express any interest in the player until 25 minutes earlier. It was a joke. So the NFL sets up this separate system that allows it to happen, but says, this is the way it's got to be. You can't talk to the player. You can only talk to the agent. So I could see why the NFL would be pissed if people are taking liberties within this 52-hour window that was set up specifically to give everyone cover for a rules violation that made everyone look bad, that makes the entire organization look corrupt. That's point one. Point two, with the Kirk Cousins thing, I was already interested in what he was going to say at his press conference because we'd been looking at it and saying, well, how do they know that his Achilles is fine? How did they get medical information? Something about this felt like it was wrong, felt like it was too much, felt like there might be tampering. So I was looking and listening to what Kirk had to say when he said, here's the smoking gun last night. The Eagles thing, I had someone raise that with me. I had someone else in the broader league apparatus say, have a look at this. And when that goes on, Chris, it makes me wonder, in this heated rivalry between the Giants and the Eagles, how much more likely are the Giants to make a stink about this than the Vikings are to make a stink about what the Falcons did? I think it's a much bigger deal from the standpoint of what is Tommy going to do when Spider tells him to go F himself? And Robert De Niro says, you're just going to take that? Because in this case, it's the Giants fans who may be saying to the Giants, you're just going to take that from the Eagles? What's the world coming to? That's what I think makes this one different.
Yeah, I hear you. It is. It's arch rivals. We know that, right? I mean, John Mara, of course, has a big place in the league office. Saquon is definitely a guy that has the heart of the Giant fans, so they're bothered by this, and especially when it goes to the Eagles. And then I think at a base level, too, you know, the league is scared of the Eagles. The league is jealous of the Eagles. There's a lot of people. So I think people got their eye on their Eagles for anything, because right now it's what Howie Roseman is doing and the way the team is built. I mean, it's on another level from everybody else in the league. It's really not even close. So I think, yeah, people are looking for the reasons to shoot down the Eagles or watch them a little bit right now, because they got so many good players, so many assets, so many things going on positively in their direction. Howie's ahead of the curve, it seems like, every year, right? So I think there is people looking for the Eagles to stumble or mess up a little bit and put a little pressure on them.
Yes, and we'll see how it goes. The league declined. The Eagles denied it. The league declined comment last night when approached by ESPN on this issue. We've got a pending email to the league asking them for a refresher on the rules about the legal tampering period and what is and isn't allowed. And we asked for comment on this Falcons.
Sure, they're thrilled with you this morning. I think they're using the word we started the show with. They're going, hey, wait, with that prick Florio, we'll start the segment and we'll end the segment with the same thing.
great callback. On a scale of 1 to 10, they would have me at 100, frankly.
Yeah.
I wear that as a badge of honor. Because what the hell else am I going to do with it? All right, let's take a break. More PFT Live right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.